This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup.
Doing it in the way that we do it has really brought luxury into it, which didn't exist before. Who would have heard of having a luxurious foot treatment? It just didn't happen, especially going to Harrods and having a luxurious foot treatment.
In this series of podcasts, I talk to people at the forefront of the creative industries. And this week, my guest is someone who's recognized internationally for their luxurious products and treatments for the hardest working parts of our bodies, our hands and our feet. Margaret Dabbs has clinics all over the world and practices here in Harrods in the Wellness Center. She's looked at the feet of some of the biggest celebrities in the world and even royalty. Welcome, Margaret. Royalty's feet. Do they get bunions and things like that?
Yes, unfortunately they do.
No, yeah, surely not. I thought they'd be too high-bred.
No,
for bunions.
Do you know though, there isn't a pair of feet that we can't transform. Doesn't matter how poor they are to start with, we can transform them or make them all feel better. So.
Well, I'm fascinated to hear your story because, you know, nowadays, you know, I remember when I used to go to New York in the 80s and they had those nail bars everywhere. And it was a revelation because, you know, in London, you'd have to book 2 weeks in advance and it would take about 5 hours to have them done. And so you just never bothered because it was just that sort of maintenance was too much. And now, of course, you know, there are tons of places to have pedicures and manicures. But what you did was you married two things together to create something incredibly pioneering. So you went from the sort of old-fashioned world of foot medicines, which make people think of themselves or indeed of their grannies.
Yes.
Tell me how you got to the feet in the first place, because you didn't grow up, you know, as a teenager, you weren't obsessing about people's feet, I presume.
No, but the worrying thing is my first job was in a shoe shop, which is a bit of a worry. But yeah, I started my medical career, if you like, working with a private surgeon who was very much like a mentor to me. My family, my children, he became my children's godfather and we all knew him as Dr. Jim. And he taught me really a lot. I used to work in the operating theatre with him. And I can remember it just hitting me one day, I'm going to do feet. I really don't. There must have been something going on. I think one of my aunties many, many years ago looked after feet and it must have been there somewhere. And I decided I'm going to do feet. And because I was so experienced working on skin and tissues and learning so much working one-to-one with him, once I qualified in feet, I found I had a knack of doing them really well. And I have got that kind of work ethic anyway that I have to. I'm really incredibly impatient in life, really impatient, but give me a foot and I will do it. I'm an artist. I will make sure that that foot is left perfect, absolutely perfect. So once I was qualified in feet, I knew where I wanted to take them. I can remember in my really early days seeing an elderly lady. And after I'd finished the treatment, I spent a little bit of time massaging her feet and she started to cry. And I couldn't believe, and she just said, nobody's ever done that to me, as if she was kind of too old for someone to be kind to her and you know, give her a treatment that wasn't just a basic chiropody-style treatment. So it made perfect sense to me to take a foot, to use wonderful products that were previously only really used in, you know, for the face, and actually formulate products that were going to not only transform the way the feet feel, but also how they looked with great ingredients, luxurious feel, and, you know, feet that had as much attention, if you like, as the face did.
But it's really interesting though, isn't it, that this part of our body that does so much work for us, carries us around all day long, every day, we either hide away. I mean, so many people are embarrassed about their feet.
Yeah.
And if we do get them out in public, often we shouldn't because they're in such a state.
I think the reason people don't like their feet, mostly is they've never known what to do with them. But when I grew up, you know, there was one style of footwear that was fashionable for the whole season. And, you know, it was a different world really for feet. And now, of course, I go out through the winter, Christmas parties, we wear sandals. We really are focusing on our footwear with our fashion. And so, of course, we have to look after our feet so that we can wear those shoes.
But how much then of what you do is damage limitation because women wear such ridiculous shoes? I mean, I know men, you know, wear much more fashionable shoes these days than perhaps they did 20 years ago. But I mean, women wear shoes that really are uncomfortable, damage their feet and, you know, don't seem to be very sensible at all.
Yeah, to a point though, but if you go back, you know, to the 1940s when people, you know, with the wartime and there really wasn't the selection of footwear, I mean, that's when the biggest damage was done and that's when you really had the bunions and the... Now I think that there's such an array of styles, we can, if we're sensible... We can limit the damage because we can choose footwear styles, designers that actually work much better for our own feet.
So how did you, having had this light bulb moment that you were going to focus on feet, how did you go about doing that? What did you study first? And then how did you set up? You know, tell me a little bit about your story because, I mean, you've done amazingly.
Thank you. I studied podiatry and that's the degree for looking after feet. Not many people know about it, and it's part of the healthcare sector. And once I did that, opened a clinic almost immediately, and I can remember in my early days, you know, taking an hour and a half to do a treatment. And so at first it was a few patients. Then it became quite key. I would see a patient that would be so thrilled. Then she'd announce to me that maybe she worked at Vogue or she did some. And it kind of went like that, that people would say, you know, my friend works for Daily Mail. Would you mind if she comes to see you? And so it was just all my hard work that actually just led to people talking about it and writing about it.
And where was this first salon? And were you the only person working there or were you already training people up to approach feet and hands in with the philosophy that you have?
Yeah, it was in the Harley Street area and I was alone and I was working. It was quite a while I was on my own. But interestingly, the first podiatrist I have ever had working for me still works for me now. But yes, first of all, it was on my own. And I just worked very, very hard. So actually getting people to think the way I think has been incredibly difficult since I qualified to now. The world is a different place. I don't think it was ready for me. Podiatrists are now realising that actually they need to give people what they want. It isn't a case of just, you know, curing an ailment and sending somebody on their way with crooked nails or with feet that are not hydrated. So I do think that I've changed things, not only in the world of treatments, but also in the profession.
Well, maybe in London you have, but there's not very many imitators outside of the capital. And I'm surprised that, because it seems to make absolute sense what you do. You know, it's all very well going for a manicure or a pedicure if you're lucky enough to be able to do those things. But, you know, for all of us, there are other issues with our feet that aren't dealt with just those treatments. They're just sort of the sort of superficial top layer, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are you surprised that you haven't had more imitators?
I am surprised, but we're having more. I have lots of people that contact me from out of London now asking if they can use the products. And that's wonderful. I mean, that for me is great recognition because I think there are a lot of years and there probably still is a sector of people that say, oh, Margaret Dabbs, that's not medical, that's beauty. Which, of course, we have straddled the two, fused the two together. So we use kind of the medical science, but to give the treatment results, I always compare it to dentistry. Now, many years ago, dentistry in the UK was about, you know, root canals. It was about fillings. And now those dentists, if they didn't move on to implants, teeth whitening, jaw alignment, perfect smile, they wouldn't be in business anymore. And I just think the podiatry is a lot slower to move, but that's the general direction. And I believe that's the direction I've taken it.
Is it hard to get away from the image of the sort of granny feet?
No, do you know the average age of our patients, I'll call them patients, is in the 40s and we have loads of men, absolutely stacks of men. You know, people have a massage now and a facial every month. They'll make sure that they're having a foot treatment every month as well. And to see, you know, especially men coming in and feeling that, I think it's amazing. I think we're kind of very much a no-nonsense business, if you like, and no nonsense. We like to get in, we like, you know, to do a luxurious treatment. So the luxury is in the treatment outcome, in the products we're using, in the room you're sitting in, and the environment, which is very alien to looking after people's feet. We're not spa-like, we're not kind of glossy and glossing over. There's no pretense there.
So does it feel medical?
It does feel medical, yeah, absolutely. It feels medical.
And I'm sure that part of the appeal for men to coming to you, apart from the fact that they're all metrosexual now, and since we're all out doing all the work, they've got time to have pedicures. but aside from those reasons, I'm sure that they come to you because you came up with this rather brilliant concept of the medical pedicure, which takes any sort of, you know, overt... femininity out of the process, I suppose, and makes it sound more like a procedure.
Yeah, that's true.
Were you cynically aware of that when you came up with the idea for it?
Well, I always knew that men could really benefit. And obviously, men were slow at the beginning on the uptake. The men that see us now, along with the women, but the men, it's, you know, high achieving, top of their profession, high earning men that actually are time poor. They have got the money, but they're time poor. They're not men that spend hours and hours every week looking after themselves. And they believe now looking after their feet and actually their hands. Because when I started, hardly any of the men had manicures. Now, the great thing is that we can do manicures as well, and we can do manicures in the treatment room even. And having that ability, a man can get it all done. It is a private room as well. So if you are embarrassed about your feet, you know, you can keep them to the professional. It really doesn't matter.
So tell me all the things you could do for me. I mean, I'm looking now in deep embarrassment at my nails today because I haven't got any nail varnish on. They're dry, dry, dry. They're incredibly thin because all through the summer I've had gels on them, and I know you don't approve of them.
Yeah. And you're fair-skinned as well. It makes a really big difference. So,
and I've got very old hands. They've always been looked old. They've looked old since I was 20.
It's because you're so fair.
Very old.
I think we do suffer when
and
we're fair.
And then my feet... Well, they're not too bad because I've always worn flat shoes, so I don't have particularly bad bunions and things.
No.
But, you know, that's a bit thick, that toenail on the top toe.
It's a little bit long.
What, the nail?
The nail, because it'll hit off your shoes and then you'll
get my nails.
A little bit long, but you've got... Do you know what? It all starts with the ingredients. So when I first started practicing, people kept saying to me, what can I use for my feet?
Because all the products, I have to say, because I've looked into this since I started researching doing this interview, and all the products that you find for feet in the local chemists or whatever, they're all really quite gross.
They are.
They smell horrible, they're greasy, but they don't actually sink in.
No, that's right. And that's exactly why I formulated the product. So people kept asking me what they could use. And I felt, even for myself, that beauty products didn't work on a treatment level, and treatment remedies were pretty unpleasant to look at. And I remember once, before I qualified in podiatry, and I needed to use a foot product, and I bought one of the chemist brands, and I hid it in a cup in the bag that I bought it in, because I didn't want anyone to see that I was using that. And of course, I've turned that around with formulations now that people are proud to have in their bathrooms and beside their bed. So for people that can't get to see me, we've got the products and the remedies that really work while you're at home, and also to maintain the treatments from a treatment result. So if we start with the feet,
just I've got my loafer back on because she was so strict about the length of my toenail. I thought I'd better just hide them.
So, with the feet, I've got a formulation. The first product I ever formulated, the intensive hydrating foot lotion, is the one that I formulated to reduce hard skin buildup, and it will visibly do that. Use it every day. Don't use a body moisturiser on your feet because the skin's much thicker on the foot, so it won't work.
Oh, knew that.
12 times thicker the skin on the foot, and that's why...
That makes sense.
So I always say keep your body lotion for above the ankle. I have a formulation that you may even have heard of called the foot hygiene cream. I formulated it for the worst feet, for things like athlete's foot and blisters and cracks and itchiness and sweating and sweat. It's quite breathtaking when I read reviews and the amount of people that stop me and say how it's changed their life. And it's really quite touching. And I suppose, really, if I'm 100% honest with myself, that's why I formulated products. Every time somebody says to me, I use that product, it's amazing. Recently, I was in the street and there was a lady with a wheelchair, and I stood back so that she could get up the curb. And she pointed to me and she said, you're Margaret Dabbs, aren't you? And I said, yes. And she leant over to the gentleman in the wheelchair and she said, this is the lady that makes a product that we put on your feet. Now, this is a man that isn't really using his feet, and obviously it's vital that he keeps them healthy. And that means so much to me, and especially the fact that his formulations are lovely to use. They smell lovely. They feel luxurious.
You're clearly on a mission.
Yes.
But you're not a chemist, so how did you go about developing these products? And at what point did you realise, I mean, was the thing, I'm going to concentrate on feet, and then what products am I going to use? And was that when you realised you had to create some of your own, or how did that transpire?
Yeah, exactly that. So people were asking me what they could use, and I really felt that there was nothing that I could recommend. So I did a lot of research and sourced ingredients actually from Australia initially, because they were way ahead of the skincare regime because of the sun damage and everything. So I sourced ingredients and mixed them, literally mixed them with an aqueous cream base in my clinic and made little pots. And
you did it.
I did that. That's just how I started it. And then people were saying, you know, it's amazing. Could I take it home and what have you? And then I made an appointment to meet a few pharmacists and to discuss how I would do this. And I remember them looking at me thinking, she's just a housewife, she's never going to do this. And my first range of products was a run of 22,000 units because the manufacturer, I'm sure he thought he'd never see me again. And at that stage, he said, oh, no, minimum order is whatever of each unit, which was, you know, I've since found out was, you know, we could have easily managed a different minimum order. But
what a bigger one.
Oh, yeah, no, 22,000, it was just, oh my gosh. And somebody said to me, what are you going to do if these don't sell? But I really believed in them. I really believed in what I was doing.
So did you know where you were going to sell them?
No.
Did you borrow the money to pay for the 22,000?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. And interestingly,
did you do the labels yourself and everything?
Everything, all the wording. I still do all of that, to be honest. All the wording, everything I did myself. But what's interesting about that is that if you're a big brand, you get production samples, you get everything. You've sold them before you've even made them. You're making them to order. If you're my size, you get them when they land. When 22,000 units land, you get the product, you know. And so there's no way of going. And then you go to a store and they say, well, we're planogrammed up until next August, but we can look at you for next September. And you're thinking, what
am I going to do with them?
Actually, I was really lucky because the products, if you've got a good product, if you believe in it, I think go for it. If you really believe in it, don't expect anybody else to jump in and help you out or, you know, raise money for you if you don't believe in it yourself. And I've stuck by that and it's paid off.
Is it true that the main ingredient that you sourced in Australia was emu oil?
That's right.
And what is that? Does it have anything to do with the emu?
Yeah, it's a byproduct from the emu bird. So it's not suitable for vegans, but it's fine for people that are happy to wear, you know, a vegetarian and wear leather. Now, emu oil I sourced for a really important reason, looking after diabetics and high-risk patients. It's suitable for them. It's in Australia. It's known for its pharmaceutical qualities and its healing qualities. So it's used in its neat form to treat eczema and psoriasis. It has anti-inflammatory. It's for bones and joints, antifungal, antibacterial, hugely moisturising. And it's readily accepted into the skin. And that is why I use it on feet and problem feet. Interestingly, I'm just about to launch my first vegan range, Pure Feet.
Oh, amazing.
It is coming next week. You know, the world is a changing place.
For a lot of people, feet, some people find feet sexy, I know that. But for a lot of people, they're a bit of a turn-off. They're like, oh, God, no, not the feet. Especially men's, until they've all started going to you, obviously. So do you ever look at someone's feet and think, oh, God, really, do I have to? Or do you see everything as a challenge? I mean, do you still look at people's feet even? Do you have lots and lots of, you know, helpful assistants who do it?
Yes, I do have lots of amazing podiatrists, actually, which is great. But I do still look at feet, and there isn't a foot that we can't help. I was in my clinic having a treatment, actually, the other week, and a gentleman was leaving, and I heard him say that the receptionist said to him, how was your treatment? How are your feet? And he said, oh, amazing. He said, I had pain for 3 years. I didn't realise that, just put up with it and put up with it. And I think that's what people did. People, no one knew where to go or what to do. And the same as products for the feet. So we talked about hard skin, dry skin, you know, thickened nails, all of those issues. And again, for the hands, you know, I've got formulations that...
Oh, yeah, we haven't done my hands yet. Mm.
Well, formulations that are treatments that work on, that target the age spots, you know, work on elasticity,
what age spots?
Renewal, on fair skin. This time of year, well... This time
when
of year,
the tan fades, it's terrible.
Yeah, it is. But also, we're very fair, and fair skin means it's finer skin, it's thinner skin, and that goes for your nails as well. So I'd keep gels off your fingernails.
Yeah, tell me about your thoughts about gels.
Well, gels can be really helpful. And for people with darker skin and skin that's not as fine as fair skin, they can tolerate them really well. But when you've got fine skin and thinner nails, the gel layers will, of course, weight down on the nail, and that can have its own problems as well. And then it can dehydrate and dry a nail. So,
because you've also developed nail varnishes, haven't you?
Yes.
That are different from the nail varnishes that I can buy elsewhere.
Yeah, they are. And they're treatment enriched and vitamin E in there. So they're just not as harsh. There's three main ingredients across the nail polish range, which they don't have in them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I might have to get some for my daughter, who seems to like to paint her nails about four times a day.
Oh.
Then again, that's because she doesn't have to do the dishes, isn't it? So I'm very surprised to see you. You're looking incredibly glamorous, beautiful scarlet dress.
Thank you.
But a very high, pointy pair of stiletto, I mean, probably Jimmy Choo's or...
Valentino's.
Excuse me.
Lovely, yeah.
They're amazing,
yes.
But they're probably not the best shoes for your feet, are they? So
walking.
Don't you care?
Do you know what? Everything in moderation. So pain is the biggest indicator. So, you know, don't wear anything that's going to be... Pain's there for a reason. Avoid it. Vary it. You know, you're wearing your trainers, you can wear your wedges, you can wear your platforms, you can wear completely flat. Just vary it. Chop it around, and that way you'll be able to get away with everything. The great thing about wearing a heel is, dare I say, it helps maintain the arches of the feet.
Does it?
It does. But of course, there's negative with that as well, because it will throw your balance forward and build a hard skin under the metatarsal heads and what have you. So everything in moderation.
Is it a bit like being a hairdresser? You know how we tell our hairdressers all kinds of intimate things about us that we don't really mean to, but you're trapped in the salon and you're sort of having a chat, and the next thing you've told them you're having an affair.
Yes.
Or, you know, whatever it is that gets revealed. Does that happen?
Yes.
Because you've got someone in quite a vulnerable situation, and most people are as insecure, if not more so, about their feet than they are about even their hair, which is another source of sort of angst, isn't it?
And we've got them in a private room as well, which you don't always have when you're doing hairdressing. Yeah, absolutely. We hear everything. I've been in the middle of, you know, major divorce cases going on all the way through. But first of all, I know it sounds ridiculous to say it like this, but I'm not a gossip. And anything I hear, anything I see, I wouldn't ever repeat. Ever, ever, ever. In a million years, it wouldn't occur to me to do that. So I think people feel that if you're in a treatment, the podiatrists, they are all, it is a professional qualification. So no one has to really worry, you know, what's going to happen or, you know, what's going to be said following a treatment. But yes, we hear all sorts.
So obviously, for a lot of people, just having a manicure is a luxury, or indeed a pedicure. I wonder, from your point of view, what you see as luxuries. I mean, you clearly see looking after your hands and feet as an essential.
Mm-hmm. I do. But doing it in the way that we do it has really brought luxury into it, which didn't exist before. You know, who would have heard of having a luxurious foot treatment? It just didn't happen, especially going to Harrods and having a luxurious foot treatment. But I suppose for me, because I've worked so hard building this business and my vision and everything that I have with it, holiday time, which I don't do very often, is a luxury for me. Exercise, I love being on holiday and exercising. Spending great time with very close friends and family means really a lot to me.
And if you were to be asked, you know, what your absolute luxury item is, the thing that you just, for you, is massively important, what would it be?
Oh, holidays.
So what's the perfect holiday? I know, because you can't bring it into the room with me as you're supposed to bring your luxury. So you can just tell me about the perfect holiday.
My perfect holiday. Actually, I just had a perfect holiday with my daughter, and the two of us went off and we went to La Residencia in Mallorca, and it was just beautiful. It was set in the mountains. We trekked in the mornings before breakfast, and we sat around the pool and we read, and we went out in the evening and had glasses of champagne, and we just had a lovely time.
And has your daughter inherited your foot fetish?
My daughter's at medical school, but she hasn't quite inherited my foot fetish, but she's done neurosurgery, or neuroscience, I should say, and now she's at medical school. So she's quite focused. And she says to me, when we talk about what I've done, she says, "Mum, it was so random," she said, "but so clever." You know, she laughs about it.
I mean, do you still relish it in the same way? Because obviously at the beginning, you were literally hands-on.
Yes.
You were doing the work, you were doing the thing you loved, you were building a business. What excites you now?
That's really a good question. I mean, talking about hands-on, I have two children, and I can remember in the early days, packaging products that came through for website. You know, it was literally like that. And I can remember one incident that I think will make you laugh. I had a glass of wine. I was sitting there doing the invoices.
7 o'clock
in the evening. One child had one part of the job and the other. And my son, who was about 9 at the time, said to his sister, use the sellotape, wax my leg. So instead of them packaging up a product with sellotape, she ended up waxing his leg with sellotape. So it was really, and things like that you can look back at and really laugh, you know, the different things. But now I think just doing more of what I'm doing, getting credits for things. I love it when people take the time to give me emails to say what difference products made to their life. I'm pretty proud that I've opened a sector. And also previously, especially in the beauty environment, there's never been any money in hands and feet, ever. If you go to a spa, it's one of those things they just don't want to do. And so I'm the first person that's actually showed them that actually there is revenue in this part. You know, it's a neglected part of the body, and there's revenue to be had if you do it well.
What gave you the wherewithal to come up with this pioneering idea and push it all the way through? I mean, what kind of kid were you? Were you determined? Because it's quite an achievement, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I think I've always been very determined. I grew up with two sisters and a brother. Our mother died when we were very young. My father died when we were young. And I suppose it just made me push on and want to achieve. I was a twin. This sounds awful now. I was a twin and my twin sister died. And sometimes I think we were premature. And sometimes I think maybe that was the fight. I mean, I've run marathons and I've trekked Kilimanjaro. So I've got a fight in me somehow. I've got quite a steely. But with all that, I'm also quite sensitive and I've got a big level of compassion in me. But also I've got that steel in me, that fight that means, you know, pick yourself up and do it.
Now, I know you spend a lot of time in Harrods anyway because you set up at the wellness clinic. But if I was to say to you now, go forth, whichever department you fancy, go and indulge yourself, where would you head?
Oh, it has to be footwear. absolutely. Has to be shoes. Strange, isn't it? Really strange. Yeah, I love, yeah, that would be my number one department, yes.
You are totally a foot obsessive.
I know. Somebody once said, Margaret Dabbs was weird about feet, but
I think that should be your strap line. Margaret Dabbs is weird about feet.
Oh, that wouldn't sell very much.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Margaret Dabbs. That was the final edition in this series, but you can find all the episodes on your usual podcast platforms. The series was recorded in Harrods in London.